96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. In 1996, then-President Bill Clinton signed into law sweeping welfare reform legislation. It was billed at the time as Welfare to Work, an attempt to move families from public assistance to private independence. Some 20 years later, its success has been spotty at best. Well, now, here in the district, changes are coming. What are those changes and what impact could they have on residents still on welfare after 60 months? That is 5 years. Well, joining me to talk about this are Ward 1 D.C. Council Member Brianne Nadeau and Samandi Lloyd, a D.C. homeless advocate. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Would like to hear from you, your thoughts about welfare reform some 20 years later and some possible solutions as we move forward. Certainly, you can comment on my Facebook page at facebook.com/HaroldFisherWHUR, or you can follow us on Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Councilmember Nadeau, thank you so much for joining me. And Ms. Lloyd, thank you again for coming on to the program.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let me ask you first, Councilmember, has welfare reform failed?
Well, you know, it has evolved. And this is the 20-year anniversary of a reform of a system that at the time was failing. And I think what we have to keep in mind is the system is only as good as the supports we put around it. So in the district, we see that we need more resources into job training, into education, and that we need to make sure the affordable housing pipeline is strong. And without all those things, then we can't expect people to really move off of the assistance because they're not getting ahead.
You are the head sponsor of legislation that will extend some of the benefits for TANF, temporary assistance for needy families. What's your plan?
Well, when we look at the folks in the district who are participating in this program, we see young mothers, perhaps new mothers. We see lots of children, 10,000 children are on the program. We see women who and men who have fled domestic abuse. And we also see adults who have a very low literacy rate, who have a lot of work to do before they can even qualify for many of the jobs that are available to us. And so in the district, we're trying to fire on all cylinders to get those things done for the people in need so that they don't need the assistance. And the challenge is that the federal law requires us to cut people off after 60 months, regardless of whether or not they're playing by the rules, meaning doing their job training, doing the programs that they're required to do. So you could be making great progress, but because of this arbitrary end date, you're then going to be set back and perhaps be at risk of losing your home or whatever else these benefits are helping you maintain. So in the district, we're trying to create our own allowances so that we can encourage that progress.
Ms. Lloyd, what is your opinion of welfare reform as it was signed into law some 20 years ago? What was right with it? What was wrong with it?
What was right with it is that they were trying to prepare those on welfare to get back or have a better way of life and not to depend on, but to create an independence by Welfare to Work program, putting, you know, people at work, different areas, even with the federal government and local governments. The downside of this, as the council member said, I feel that the preparation stage was not in place for everyone. There should have been a feasibility study. Not everyone can work, as she stated. Welfare to Work comes with mental health issues. It comes with lack of education. It comes with economics. Now, these are issues that we are supposed to look at when we talk about ending this series that has been in the system for generations to come. So to just say that this is going to end at a certain time needs as much preparation as it has been in the progress.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about welfare reform some 20 years later and what impact it could have on residents, particularly here in the District of Columbia, as things begin to change and to evolve. Give us a call if you have a comment or a question. Let's go to Ronell, calling from Elk Ridge, Maryland. Ronell, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, good afternoon, everybody.
Hey, how are you?
Young lady. Y'all are real awesome, man. I appreciate y'all. I guess, Harold, my question would be to everybody is this. You know, I find it very relatively odd when you have the type of job where you have to go into people's houses because of things. And they're on Section 8, Harold, and they live in so comfortable and so better than the average person out here working 12-hour days and all this other stuff. So my thing is that this, I think we should keep what Clinton did, to be honest with you, because maybe if we kept it and we did not see D.C. government, if they're not, to me, from what I'm hearing, maybe I'm wrong and maybe y'all can explain to me, but to me, D.C. government is being more of an enabler. They're enabling mm-hmm. people to stay on these programs. And so I have issues about that when I fill out my taxes every year.
Well, let me see if the council member can at least address that. Can you talk to me about, he's talking about subsidized housing specifically.
Sure. No, I certainly understood the spirit of the question, and I think that it's really important for us to hear a question like that because it actually raises the stigma issue, right? When welfare reform began in the 90s, there was this narrative about what they called, let's say, welfare queens, mm-hmm. people who were living fat and high off of the government dime. And the truth is that our recipients in the District of Columbia, and I would assume across the country, are, for the most part, people who are working very hard to get back on their feet. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure, as with any system, there are some people who abuse it. But it's not enough money that you're living high, that you're living, you know, this great life. For some families, it's as little as $120 a month, but it might be that little bit of money that helps them pay the bills for a friend who allows them to stay in the extra bedroom and not end up on the street. And I think that's the thing we need to think about.
Mm-hmm. And I understand what you're saying, Councilwoman, and I
agree
respect
with
you. God heaven knows, I respect you. I know you're a lovely woman. But I guess, Councilwoman, I look at it where that my wife and I, we're together. We have two children in college. And with our salaries, we're in that bracket now. And it's like I'll get frustrated. I do because I'm thinking like, oh, my God, I'm up here working hours and my wife is working and we get to this bracket now. And then I'm looking at everybody else. And I know that's not godly. And I've been asking God to forgive me for that. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, God, they're living really high on the hog. And I'm paying for my kids to go to Hampton. You know, because I want them in the HBCU, because I went to HBCU, and I'm like, I want them in Hampton.
Well, hold on, Ronell, because obviously I also understand the spirit of your question, and it is not an invalid concern. But I think when you have to, when you look at, for example, the article that brought all of this to light in the Washington Post, there really is a great example that welfare reform is not a one-size-fits-all solution. It is imperfect, as I said, you know, in the beginning, and sometimes there are impediments for people to work, even those with training, as in the example in the Post where there was a mother with, you know, with two children who cannot afford daycare so that she can go to work, Ms. Lloyd.
Exactly. And I do understand his emotions, and I understand where it's coming from. But when you see a mother out there with her children looking clean, and she looks well-dressed, and she may be on welfare, you cannot assume that she live in large. A lot of us assume that people are on welfare or living in public housing are living large because they don't have to come up with the same amount of money that you have to come up. But guess what? There are those who are in public housing who also have to pay a percentage. It may not be 100% free. And even with the woman on welfare, those who want something better of their lives, they have to go to school, they have to work. Their lives may be worse than yours, but you, because you are going to work every day and she's home, you may feel that way. And I like what you said, that you're praying that God will forgive you to have a different insight on this whole situation. But I will urge you to talk to people who are on welfare and find out what's going on in their lives, and you will see that their situation might probably be that they cannot even send their children to college, but you can. Let's look at it from another side of the box.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about welfare reform 20 years after the then Clinton administration signed it into law. Let's go to Stephanie. Stephanie calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Stephanie. Quickly, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. I'm so glad you guys just said that. I am a mother of four, and I have been a welfare recipient actually for the past 7 years. I've been involved in the Women to Work program, and it is hard. I have to go through a lot of things just in order to keep that money coming. And once I get a job, say at McDonald's, they cut that money in half. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. And it's hard, and it's hard. And in the Welfare to Work program, I feel like right at this moment, they don't have the right people in place to help us. Mm-hmm. I just turned my TANF off on May 1st because I got a job. Now, my worker was still trying to give me jobs that were beneath me. I come from a good home. So when I started having children at a young age, it became harder for me. And so when I had to get on the program, because I wanted to provide for them on my own, opposed to living off my parents.
Stephanie, can you hang on for a minute? Do you mind? Because I have some questions for you about, you know, how you've managed and your plan ahead. And I want to hold you on the line, but I do want to have the council member make some final comments, because we're going to lose her in about a minute or so. Council Member Nadeau, what do you see moving forward as a possible solution? Because I would imagine that even your legislation, even if it passes as it is really a Band-Aid and not a full-blown solution.
I think that's a fair assessment. And I also want to thank Stephanie for calling in, because I know that there is that stigma and that it is brave for her to do that and to share her story. So as I mentioned in the beginning of our discussion, it's really the skills, the job training, the skills, and of course the availability of jobs that move people off of assistance and help them sustain their families. Because we have programs for housing, as the other gentleman mentioned before, and those are different funding streams. And a person may have housing assistance and TANF assistance, but the point of TANF is that you have lots of expenses that aren't housing, that aren't food, whether it's buying clothes for your children or school supplies or whatnot. And what we want is for people to really be getting good jobs that sustain them, that they have the supports they need as a family if they have mental illness, if they have other family issues. And so it really is a whole set of wraparound services, and it requires the coordination and collaboration of agencies in the district government, of organizations in the community, and neighbors and friends to really lift up the people in their community. And so you're right, this is one piece.
Exactly.
But it's a really important piece.
I've got to take a break. I want to thank Ward 1 D.C. Councilmember Breanne Nadeau for joining us in this conversation. Certainly don't be a stranger. We definitely want to continue talking to you as the council goes back into session in the fall. So, again, thank you so very much.
Thanks,
we appreciate it.
Important topic.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday. Stay with us. Cheryl, Stephanie, Andre, we're going to continue to have this conversation with you on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. Please do not hang up. I definitely want to continue this conversation on the other side. Stay with us. More of this conversation in just a few seconds. The house.